You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Episode 1, The Phantom Thread. It is a dark time for the fashion industry. Emperor Daniel Day-Lewis rules it with an iron fist.
I don't know, man. That kind of sounds like a movie I want to see.
If only that could have been the movie.
I don't know, but you realize I'm referencing The Phantom Menace, so do you want to see it?
Hey, you know, I know the lesser of two evils for sure.
In a weird, perverse way, I kind of do.
Yeah, actually, I kind of think I would, too. I never thought I'd say this. But I think this movie would have been improved by 7,000% more CG. I'm a terrible person. Meanwhile, serious film critics are like, I feel a strange disturbance in the force. As if someone was saying something totally and utterly wrong and stupid.
Were they the people at the screening laughing like they were watching a Zucker Brother movie?
Oh my goodness. Did you watch the one tonight?
Oh, yeah. With that. Oh, yeah.
There were some people there that were just like, ah, yay, applause.
I was next to somebody guffawing. And I was like, what?
What? Yeah, I was at a press-only screening. It was like most press-only screenings were also reticent. We're just kind of quiet through most stuff. So didn't get any of that, but I'm baffled. I'm like, what were they laughing at?
He was taking notes on his notepad next to me, nudging me so I got some personal connection tonight in the Phantom Thread, because that was the only connection I got. So anyhow, and then he guffawed. What's up?
I mean, it's a funny movie, funnier than I thought it would be, but not...
Yes.
There's only a couple of moments that for me were like laugh out loud funny. A lot of it I would just kind of chuckle and smirk and be like, oh, I kind of see what you're doing
there.
I mean,
I laughed out loud at the end, but in a sort of WTF sort of way.
It's such a weird, it's like a release of tension, really. You're like, what
and
is
then you're
that?
Like, what just
really,
happened?
That is 100% the end I was expecting.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. The pace of the movie and everything that was there, they're like, ah. You're just going to bid us adieu and let us talk about this some more.
I don't know.
Expected that 100%.
Well, the point here is this is London in the 1950s. Daniel Day-Lewis in his, quote, last role, we'll see, in parentheses.
I think after this, we need another.
Renowned fictional dressmaker Reynolds Woodcock. That's one hell of a name. who lives with his sister Cyril, played by Leslie Manville. And they are so well known and so well respected. They actually are the ones who dress the goddamn royal family. They're like they are the default dressmakers, right? They dress film stars and heiresses and just everybody who's big. Like the House of Woodcock. I'm sorry. I'm like 12 years old inside. What are you offering
me? Something to live up to.
And as well, we see that Daniel Day-Lewis has like, he regularly goes through romantic interests in his life. And then he basically uses them as living, like, mannequins when he's, like, just fasting. You have the look I'm looking for. And then eventually gets tired of them and throws them away, basically. And this movie is about this woman, Alma, played by Vicky Creeps. Creeps? Creeps? I don't know. Creeps would be cool.
Creeps.
Kind of gave me the creeps. Who comes into his life. But she's a little more strong-willed, not really a giant amount. It's one of the reasons I had a hard time kind of buying where this ended up going, because she just seemed like, I'm not sure I totally see this. But who becomes his lover and his muse and his mannequin. And when she starts seeing that, you know, he's starting to do what he does, pull away from her, she ain't having it. And unfortunately, she does not go on a murderous rampage.
That is one thing that had me. I was like, where's this movie going? Because I really could see it going in a different way.
Uh-huh.
And then at one point you're introduced to a character that he spoke of. You saw that. I don't want to. Are we supposed to give things away?
Or no spoilers.
Okay.
No spoilers.
So and it backed me up in the maybe it could go this way because he's like what? And I was like, ooh, what am I watching? But then I wasn't watching that.
Nope.
No.
Then the hope died.
I felt like this movie is beautifully shot. First off, I mean the cinematography
here
is gorgeous. I mean this is directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who has this thing with working with Daniel Day-Lewis, and they're, you know, people were very excited about this movie coming out because it was the two of them together. And it's got this gorgeous background score that at one point you realize
it's a character.
Has never stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The score has just, it's an original score and it has never stopped the entire
film. It really was a lifeblood.
I know, it's like a river always going behind it. If it didn't have that music there, this movie would be nothing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's what kind of kept me going through large swaths of this film where I'm like, I get it. He's an asshole.
But he's charismatic.
But you were right.
He's charismatic in the way only a super rich, incredibly sick, like kowtowed to, quote, genius is. Mm. Where you're like, no, if you met this guy in a bar, you'd be like, fuck that guy.
Oh, yeah.
But then totally. If they were like, dude, this guy's the best there is in the world at the thing you love the most, then you'd be like, well, I guess I can put up with
him. That's that night. I thought, and this is a really cheesy thought, but the first 1 hour, and you were talking about the score right now, I literally felt like it was a collection of paintings. And then they went, poof. I mean, even driving the car, the way they were driving the car through the tunnel, the camera angle they had, moving all quick through the little village that he was going through to go clear his mind, blah, blah. I just thought it was really beautiful and fascinating to watch it move.
Right. Sure.
The first hour move. It the first
stopped.
Hour.
Yeah.
Right? It was like two different halves.
That's why I say the first hour. It was like, oh, it's a dance. You've made a collection of paintings. Like, you've given them sound and a score and music, and then it changed.
Mm-hmm. It did in the same, much the same way I felt like The Master did, by Anderson, where it was like this sudden thing where you're like, what happened to that other movie we were watching?
The interesting one.
That being said, I wasn't that interested in the first hour. I was, like I said, I was like, felt like I was looking at a gorgeous painting. But I don't want to sit and look at a painting for an hour. I just don't.
So that was kind of my thing is I thought the whole first half, it was gorgeous to look at. You know, everybody, they're giving great performances. You know, there's a lot of, you know, great dresses, great lighting and everything going on.
But what are you supposed to be feeling?
Well, that's the thing. The movie kept kind of keeping me at arm's length. Mm-hmm. And which I was hoping in the second half when it kind of takes a shift that I was in, the movie was going to kind of bring me in a little bit more. And it kind of does in the sense that, I mean, it's kind of the funnier half. In the sense that it gets kind of crazier and weirder.
Yeah.
But even then, by the time I got to the end and I got to kind of, I guess, what the point of it all was, I was just kind of left there going like, okay, I understand what you're doing and I like what you're doing and I appreciate a lot of like the razzle dazzle that you're doing to kind of deliver this message to me. But it's ultimately leaving me very kind of empty and like just sort of feeling kind of weird, you know, and kind of cold where I'm like, I don't know what, and maybe that is what I'm supposed to be feeling after this, but
I mean, I guess it was like I had a hard time from the beginning. There's, I mean, and you're not necessarily supposed to have sympathy for Daniel Day-Lewis's character, Mr. Woodcock, but because he's, you know, I mean, I guess maybe I don't know. Does it require you to have some deep-seated respect for the fashion industry in the first place? Which
no.
I don't
no.
really.
No. They don't really even
I'm just
get
like,
into it.
There's nothing about him that I like or respect other than the fact that Daniel Day-Lewis, who is such a tremendous actor, has obviously put an enormous amount of care into every movement this guy does. But you nonetheless, you're like, I don't like this guy. And then they introduce the girl, Alma, an unpopular opinion from 2017. I thought she was kind of banal. I was just not that interested in her performance. I found her very uninteresting as an actress.
Really?
And I thought right from the beginning, I was like, I don't have any sympathy for you either. You're just like, you let yourself walk into this relationship with this totally abusive relationship that it's clear 2 seconds into it. It's a super abusive relationship. Why? Because you love fashion? Guess what? Don't give a fuck. So I'm not rooting for anybody here except for maybe his sister, who seems to be the only one who can put him in his place.
Oh yeah. She had a line in the movie that was like,
so good.
And I'm all like, snap. Yeah. But I will say this, and maybe this makes me sound like a bad person and why I'm still currently single. Mm-hmm. But during the first half of the movie, his character to me was 100% relatable. Like during the breakfast, and it was him, his sister, and Alma. And he had some issues with what was happening on breakfast.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I'm like, get out of the room. I can't think. Like, to me, I mean, I wouldn't do that, but I completely understand his. And I thought that made him lovable. I thought it made him a all encompassed by his, like, craft. I thought I liked that about him. I'm like,
okay,
do what you got to do. And 100% of every day should be committed to what you love. There's no room for confrontation.
I get that point. But at the same time, if that's really how you are, you probably shouldn't date anybody.
Still single, bro. Still single.
I just, you know, or if you do, it's someone who like who you see so eye to eye with, and you work so well together, and you're both in the exact same mindset. Go forward, same direction.
And that was my biggest problem with it is I never really got what really I got what brought these two together initially. But I never got why was she sticking around?
Yeah.
And why as a relationship progresses, you know, and some of the decisions that she makes, where exactly is that coming from?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Especially by the time where the movie ends, where there's kind of this declaration made. And I kind of felt like there was a scene missing where I went, wait, why are both characters on the same page about this?
Yes.
I feel like we're missing a step.
Yeah.
You're 100% right.
I mean,
there's a big old jump there that doesn't make sense.
I mean, this is like a movie about someone figuring out what someone who is incredibly emotionally dysfunctional needs in their life from a relationship in order even to be in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And like finding that missing key. What is the thing? And then when you see what it is, you're like, well, that's fucking weird.
Yeah.
You're like, it's not entirely unexpected I mean, it is unexpected in the context of the film, except for Jacob, obviously, who said
I'm not talking about exactly what happened. Right. I'm not talking like, oh, exactly. I'm just talking about the 10 minutes and the way it wrapped up. That part, I'm like, that's the ending I was expecting. But the reason what you were saying kind of like, why?
Yeah.
I found it very unsettling. And it was pretty disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it was definitely supposed to be, but it also felt like, for a movie that the only other thing that was disturbing about it is that this guy's kind of a prick. It went to such a kind of weird, almost kinky place that I was like, okay, movie. That on the whole felt like a drawing room,
But then it
drama.
Didn't go even into that.
Yeah.
You know
I was
mean?
Like, why didn't that happen at the beginning of the second act?
Would have kept me going, too.
I agree.
Would have kept me going.
I wish the movie, that had been majority of the movie. And that's where I thought it was going to go. There were a few points earlier in the movie where it seemed like it was going to take that turn and really commit to being this really, like, weird, kinky, you know, look at this relationship.
Yeah.
And then it would pull back. And
yeah, because that was really interesting.
Yeah, and then by the time it finally does, you know, go, okay, well, this is what's going on, roll credits.
Yeah.
I think what they did was they trusted in the fact of Daniel Day-Lewis's fan base and his power and committing to a character. And they're like, you're going to like what we give you regardless.
And even more specifically, Paul Thomas Anderson's fan base who are...
Yeah.
Inexplicably rabid because I'm like, dude, you peaked at Boogie Nights. It's been downhill since then.
Me being one of those people who on all of his other movies is that rabid fan.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Watching this, I go, oh, this is what people who don't like his work. This is what it must
this
seem
is
like.
What they feel like.
Yeah. It just feels very weird and distant and kind of cold.
Yeah.
You know?
I kind of went from calling myself, I'm a fan to after Inherent Vice. I'm like, no, I'm not a fan.
Well, I thought it was beautiful, and I really enjoyed the relationships between the people in that. I liked watching the actors work, which is don't really like the relationships between the people. Let's be clear, because that was not.
It's just noxious
not okay.
to watch at points.
Yeah, but sometimes you can see. Oh yeah, I've seen that. I understand that. That's that's messed up. And how they are reacting to what I'm thought. I get it.
I did love his old so-and-so.
I did like that, too. That was charming.
Yes.
And that's where you can see where the charm and the character comes from.
But it was only first hour still with just
again,
that.
And then
he started addressing her, you know.
And
it was two separate movies.
It's not even that it's charm so much as that his performance is so absolutely to the syllable calculated with this guy who's just filled with these odd little eccentricities.
Yes,
and it's not that he's a nice person, like, ever. He's just got these weird things that he says and does that feel so like a man out of time,
it's
almost.
It's like watching
you know?
A Meisner student exercise in some ways.
Yeah.
They fed everyone caviar, and very few people like caviar.
Yeah.
That's what they fed us. And the ones who do love it and swear by it,
it's great when
they're gonna love it, and
when you gulp it down with a big glass of red wine, caviar is just fine.
Yeah. So I mean, I actually walked out wondering how I felt about it, and
I'm still trying to figure it out.
It's a one-time view for me, though.
Yeah, I mean, at 130 minutes, which is a long time to go through a movie where really, quite frankly, very little actually happens. Most of this is just kind of going over it. I mean,
situations.
It feels like this is my problem with P.T. Anderson. Sorry, Ian. That it's just a guy who kind of bought into his own press. He's now at this point where he made this movie where nothing fucking happens for 80% of it. And it's just navel gazing for me. I'm like, we already, there's no reason this couldn't have been an hour shorter than this. And we still would have gotten everything you wanted to say.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, yes, it's all gorgeous, but that's the whole thing. He's like, yes, but I'm putting such care into all these shots. Like, yes, but you still have to have things happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm a bit saddened by the fact I wanted to walk out, singing its praises for all to see. And one of those movies that even non-hardcore movie buffs would be like, hey, you need to go watch this. You're going to see what movies is all about. And I walk out saying, this painting's for someone else to purchase. It's not mine. I enjoyed it.
I can't figure out really, like, if you asked me right now, what was that all about? And what was the point? Like, I'm really struggling.
Relationships are messed up.
No shit.
I'm having a hard time with that.
So
that
it was more the phantom plot. Or the, like, how are you supposed to feel about it?
So rich, super successful fashion industry types tend to be a little fucking crazy and a bit of an asshole. You don't say.
How to manage the creative genius in your midst?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You hear that Daniel Day-Lewis actually learned to make a dress?
Like, of course he did.
This thing. Because you're like,
of course.
Because I first saw the article, I thought it was The Onion. Because it was so on the nose, Daniel Day-Lewis. And I was like, no, he actually did do that. He learned how to make like a designer dress. And
100%.
And he is his character. He works in character. So stays in his character when he's the offset during the duration of the filming.
Who is the famous actor who said to Marlon Brando, it's like, have you ever thought about, I don't know, acting? I still love that. I forget who it was. It was a really famous guy who said that to Brando. And I was like, I would have killed to have been a fly in the wall.
And I think they lived in the house that they shot in, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And so by the end of the shoot, I'm sure they hated each other to a certain extent.
I don't think the acting was flawed. I think it was the way they delivered the story.
No, the acting was beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was really well
done. Daniel Day-Lewis is still Daniel Day-Lewis. I think no less of him, but this is one of the few movies he's ever done that I didn't walk out glowing. I had to pay attention to his character to bring something good out of this film.
It made me want to go back and watch something where they knew how to really use his skill and tell a story at the same time, like Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York all day.
Yeah. All right, let's go into final thoughts. Ian, why don't you get us started?
Well, watching this movie, it reminded me a lot, actually, of Mother, the Darren Aronofsky movie. And for a lot of reasons that don't want to go into because I don't want to spoil both movies, but I found there were kind of certain similarities as far as like how the relationship dynamic worked. And Mother is a movie that for me didn't work for a lot of reasons, but that relationship wasn't one of them. And with this movie, the whole movie hinges on that relationship. And while I thought, the performances were great, looks gorgeous, sounds gorgeous. I never fully bought that relationship.
Okay.
And because of that, the whole movie kind of fell apart. And so by the time you get to the end and you reach what's supposed to be this kind of emotional zenith, it just felt very empty, you know. And I don't want to say that I hated watching it because it was pretty to look at. I, chuckled a lot while watching it. But, yeah, it ultimately left me just very cold and wishing that this were like a 90-minute movie as opposed to like a 130-minute movie. Mm. And so with that, I'd probably give it 6 omelets out of 10.
Okay, fair enough. Laura?
I'm still struggling to figure out how I feel about this movie. So I guess that means I'm not really a huge fan of this movie.
Not always. Sometimes with films like that, I end up being the biggest fan ever of give me a month or two and another
viewing.
But I don't think this is going to be that movie.
Right. And I feel like, do I want to watch this again? I don't know. And I can still hear the soundtrack in my head. So that was nice. And I love the fact that the music carried us like a river through the movie. Thank God for the music. It was beautiful to look at. It is in two halves, which is disturbing. I don't want a movie to be in two distinctly different halves. I want to have a cohesive story that I feel something, and I want to go on a journey with these characters. And I didn't want to – these characters didn't draw me into their journey. I really just, I feel cold. Same way. I walk out of there just feeling cold. But the performances were lovely. Leslie Mandel's fantastic as Cyril. I mean, she was so good as a sister. I totally buy the relationship, and that's the one I do buy. So,
yeah.
Beautiful to look at. If you like Paul Thomas Anderson, you'll love it.
Maybe. Ian's that guy, and he looks like he did love it.
So I'm going to give this I'm going to give it a 6 messages hidden in a ribbon.
Jacob?
To me, going to the movies is like going on vacation. Some places you want to go back, you know, and I saw this movie and it was at a quiet beach when I wanted a little bit more action at that beach, so to speak. It was a delicious meal that I'll have once, tell my friends I had it, but I'll recommend a different beach. I'll say, like, this is not my destination spot. I'm glad I tried this food. It isn't for me. And like Lars was saying, the acting was spectacular. The sister was great. Loved her very much. I think many people could have played his love interest. I don't think she was needed for that role. Daniel Day-Lewis is great, but it's a movie I'm going to be very selective. I'll tell one out of 20 of my friends to watch.
Right. And you know exactly who that person is.
I know exactly who that person is. So I'm going to go ahead and give it one pincushion and a Super Mario mushroom.
I feel like I keep threatening myself with, like, you better give this a slightly higher rating because it's Paul Thomas Anderson, it's Daniel Day-Lewis, and people will get mad. Like, you know what I mean?
It needs to be a 10.
And I'm like, no. And like, I don't know. I mean, everything, I think we're all on the same page, generally speaking, about this movie. But I will tell you, I was at points so bored. Just like when you're just fidgeting in your seat and you're like, for fuck's sakes. I actually, for the first time, as long as I can remember, I turned to Martin and go, what time is it?
Wow.
I was like, please tell me we're at least past the halfway mark. Cause it feels like we're in that Transformers 4 moment where you're just like, this movie has been going on for 19 hours.
It did feel like a time warp. It's like you're in it. Where am I
just
going?
Just like, when is this going to be over? Because there's no sense of like movement through most of it. There's just no sense that the plot is going anywhere through the majority of this. You're just watching these people, which I guess is great when all the technical aspects are as high as they are. And you brought up an interesting comparison to Mother, because honestly, it is a like super dysfunctional relationship. The difference for me with that one was like, the director really was doing something really different. So definitely. I don't know, in his visual way, he was telling a completely different story on top of that story. Yeah. I was kind of more interested in that story and having a great time following
it. You know what
it's
like? It's like driving through a suburb on a curved road that you can't see the end. Everything looks the same and it's at night and you just go round and round and round and round.
And you're like, I know there's got to be an exit here. How did we even get in this cul-de-sac?
Where's my street?
Yeah.
Where is it?
I'll admit, I took a pee break.
Yeah. Well, you had to at one point. It was 18 hours long.
I didn't want to, but it made the second half.
Much better.
When you're not just crossing and uncrossing your leg. I don't know. I'm going to be, and people are going to be aghast and gasp, but I'm going to give this 4 rubber masks that Daniel Day-Lewis pulled off his face to reveal he was the old man who ran the haunted amusement park where the Phantom Thread came from. That's where I went. That's all right. I put right. Scooby-Doo into a Phantom Thread review.
Yeah, you did.
Somebody had to do it.
Scoob, there it is.
I guarantee you, we are the only review of this movie that mentions Scooby-Doo. I'm proud of that.